do two bills in work session. We're going to do House Bill 2120 and Senate Bill 1189. The first one we're going to do will be a public hearing, and we will stay in public hearing until we have quorum members for the work session. Let's go ahead and have the House Bill 2120 public hearing and open air. And this relates to animal health products. I'll allow our community administrator to bring us up to speed. Mr. Rocco, can you help?
Yes, Mr. Chair. House Bill 2120 is a repeal of the sunset on the Oregon law sections regulating the registration of animal remedies, veterinary biologics, and veterinary pharmaceuticals. This bill has already passed the House by a vote of 53-5. It has been, it was referred to the Senate Agriculture and Natural Resources Committee, where they had a public hearing and work session and recommended it as due pass and then referred it to Ways and Means because of the fiscal impact. I passed out the summary of the by those other two committees, the staff measure summaries that you should have in front of you, and the fiscal impact. And I'd just like to point out that the reason there's a fiscal impact is because if this bill does not pass, then the sunset will take effect and the agency would lose the revenues identified on this on the fiscal impact as well as the use of those revenues. The amount of the fiscal impact is included in the governor's recommended budget, which has anticipated this bill being passed and has included these expenditures within the recommended budget.
Any questions from the committee for the administrator? Okay, we're in at full strength. I'd like to call up Mr. Clark, the state veterinarian, and Glenn Cole from the Oregon Veterinarian Medical Association. Gentlemen, good morning.
Good morning. Good morning.
When you're ready.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Andrew Clark. I'm the state veterinarian at the Oregon Department of Agriculture. The veterinary product registration program has been in force for 8 years. The proposed change is to repeal the sunset clause of the statute, making it permanent law. Veterinary products registration is an important part of the funding of the animal health programs, accounting for about 25%, $235,000, of the total annual revenue. The Department of Agriculture Animal Health Program revolves primarily around control of diseases transmissible between animals to humans and animals to animals, diseases of significant economic impact to our animal industries, and the control of emergency diseases. State federal cooperative disease control programs in brucellosis, tuberculosis, pseudorabies, and florum typhoid allow our animal production to move interstate and internationally with minimal restriction. The Animal Health Laboratory tests about 130,000 samples annually for disease control programs and for interstate and international movement of animals, allowing our producers to maximize their economic potential. Our import system issues about 12,000 permits annually, controlling animal movement into the state and preventing the introduction of animal diseases. Disease control programs are in place and certification programs are being developed and implemented. Our animal health emergency management planning, preparation, and training is being undertaken. A program of permitting of exotic animals, that is exotic cats, exotic canines, primates, and bears, is in place and operational. Food safety at production level is a significantly increasing concern and is anticipated to be a major future involvement of our animal health programs. The deputizing of private veterinary practitioners enables them to work on behalf of the state veterinarian and disease control programs, making the programs work smoothly statewide. Liaison and cooperation with a variety of federal, state, and local agencies, producer organizations, professional groups, and animal interest program organizations is an important involvement of the animal health program. This funding allows us to function with 3 field veterinarians, our animal health laboratory, and the necessary office support. Without this revenue, the effect would be crippling cuts in personnel and services performed for the animal industries of our state. Our ability to respond to an outbreak of emergency disease would be seriously impaired. Planned initiatives in production-level food safety and disease certification programs would be reduced or scrapped, and our laboratory would be less able to provide immediate regulatory testing and disease certification services to Oregon's animal owners. Rapid and efficient administration of this program is in place and is functioning. Spot checking of items for sale on shelves is done periodically to assure uniformity and fairness. The whole system is working well and is accepted by the affected parties. It is in the best interest of the state, I think, to make this into permanent law. Thank you.
Questions? Mr. Mitchell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't have a question. I just am very supportive of this program. It worked well, and I think we need this kind of support for not only the public safety, but for the industry itself.
Cole, did you have anything to add?
Chairman Ferriola and committee members, I just want to say our organization does support this. We say, you know, passage is just good for animal health. And our concern is that loss of the funds would seriously hinder animal health division's ability to monitor and address serious health issues in animal care and stewardship in the state.
Questions for Mr. Cole? We have letters in the file, colleagues from the Oregon Cattlemen's Association and the Oregon Farm Bureau. And Mr. Stonebrink and Mr. Nelson have both signed up, but let me just ask, would your testimony be favorable? Any opposition to the bill? Any other person here present that wishes to give testimony? Hearing none, we'll close the public session and the work session of the bill.
Yes, Chair.
Senator Carno.
I move on to the 2120 that's forward to the House recommendation.
Senator Carno moves the House Bill 2120 to the Full Ways and Means Committee with a due pass recommendation. Any questions on the motion? Clerk will call the roll.
Representative Westland?
Aye.
Simpson?
Aye.
Mr. Lee?
Aye.
Morgan?
Aye.
Senator Carno? Corcoran?
Aye.
Chair Ferriola?
Aye.
Passes.
Motion passes. The chair will carry. We'll go right to Senate Bill 1189 and open a public hearing on Senate Bill 1189.
Oh,
I'm
sorry.
Could I ask Representative Eshley to be our House Chair? Thank you, Representative.
But you said it went by the House.
It started into the House.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure.
I guess we'll dispense with the House Chair. Same version.
No amendment.
Okay, open the public hearing on the Angrist version of Senate Bill 1189. And Mr. Ledger, if you want to come forward and let me allow Mr. Rocco to brief the committee on what the bill does.
Mr. Chair, Senate Bill 1189 expands the enforcement procedures for water quality violations. This measure has been to the Senate Water and Land Use Committee and was sent to Ways and Means with a 4-0 vote. Primarily, the bill provides another administrative process to allow the record to be established, and I think Mr. Ledger is probably much better at explaining this than I would.
Mr. Ledger, good morning.
Thank you, members of the committee, Mr. Chairman. Good morning. My name is John Ledger with Associated Oregon Industries. The bill, when you read it, is pretty turgid, difficult to read. So I did. You should be passing out a flow chart to you that shows you how the bill works. It has come out of the Water and Land Use Committee on the Senate unanimously. At first blush, it looks odd because it really makes a path for
for us to have public or public involvement on consent orders, which a lot of people, a lot of companies don't like. But it has some benefits that are very real. Right now, if you find yourself in violation of a water quality discharge standard, say your city or your facility, and you go to the DEQ and you enter into a consent order. A consent order is a binding agreement between somebody and the government saying, we agree to settle this enforcement issue and we're going to build a facility or we're going to change the plant or whatever. And we're going to come into compliance. And because a lot of these things involve construction, it might take 2 or 3 years to come into compliance. Well, during that time, if you're violating your permit, which is what you would be because that's how you got on a consent order, you can be sued by a third party, citizen suit, for up to $25,000 a day for the violation. And so what that means is if you're a city or facility and you enter into a consent agreement with the state, you're kind of laying everything out there and making yourself vulnerable to third-party citizen suits, which we don't think is fair and it's not good and it doesn't result in people coming forward. Under the Clean Water Act, you can enter into a consent order with the state using a little bit different route. And that route is sort of like a rulemaking. That is that the agency gins up the consent order, and it goes out to public notice like a rule would. And then comments can be received in on the draft consent order. Either the company, city, or the public can request a hearing. You have essentially a contested case hearing on the order, and then the DEQ would issue the final consent order. And because the public is involved in the issuance of the final consent order, you gain a shield from third-party suits. So your consent order goes out to the public, there's some exposure, there's less certainty, but you gain a shield until you fulfill the requirements of your consent order. The shield is only good for the things covered in the consent order, and you always have to comply with the consent order. This process is laid out in the Clean Water Act, although it's kind of spread around, so it was sort of brought together in this bill. But essentially what the bill does is provide a public information process. It is at the option of the city or the company which route they would like to go. They can go the old route and negotiate the consent order with the DEQ privately, like they do now, but then they'll be open to possible lawsuits. Or they can go the new way, which involves the public and gain the shield. The cost of this particular activity we are willing to pay for. So on your chart, everything on this side that has all the lines and boxes on it, what our amendment does is say DEQ can charge a fee, promulgate a fee structure to pay for all of that, with one exception. And that is when a hearing is requested by someone other than the discharger, then that hearing would be paid for, not by the discharger. So we don't have a situation where hearings can be requested simply as a punitive measure. All the rest of the pathway, including a hearing if the discharger requests it, would be picked up by the discharger. That's what the amendment does. The bill is supported by, actually the co-requester is the Association of Clean Water Agencies, which is 75 municipalities, dischargers, stormwater districts. And we think this would be good for the public and good for facilities also.
Questions from the committee?
Okay. The question she came up is the one that's not being answered. In the fiscal analysis, I don't see any ramp up for the second day.
Scirocco, the question has been asked by Mr. Messerly. On Senate Bill 1189, on the fiscal analysis, there's no ramping up for costs in the second biennium, or the second year of the biennium. So the question is, or actually in the second biennium, the question is, why is there no ramp up?
Mr. Chair, that's the normally we do in order to address roll up costs and other issues like that, we direct agencies not to provide us with inflationary increases in the second biennium, so we can see if there is any difference between the first biennium and the second. If, for example, if these FTE in the first biennium would be phased in over the biennium, then we could see the difference in the total cost once full implementation occurs. that's the reason there's no difference.
Other questions?
Thank you.
Mr. Morris, did you want to offer an opinion?
Please.
Question, Rush and Blessing.
Maybe the same one. Oh, you go ahead and ask him.
On your own.
Thank you. You're
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Langdon Marsh, DEQ Director, and I wanted to comment briefly on the bill 1189A engrossed. As Mr. Ledger pointed out, there was a recent court case where the judge, federal judge, said that the department's penalty process was not comparable to the Federal Clean Water Act because of the unavailability of this public process that Mr. Ledger outlined. And the comparability would provide some protection from potential third-party lawsuits. And John has described the bill well. I won't go through what it does, but we have met with Associated Oregon Industries and Association of Clean Water Agencies, and we do support the bill. However, we do have a concern about resources, and that's what the amendment that Mr. Ledger offered covers. However, the fee that's allowed for there does not cover third-party requested hearings and certain other actions. We do have submitted a revised fiscal to Mr. Rocco, estimate that about 75% of the hearing requests will be by third parties wanting to add evidence to the record, and that we've identified some additional denials of hearings that would occur under Section 5 that would also not be covered by the fee. The modified fiscal shows about 1.3 FTE and $241,000 for the biennium. The fees would cover $148,000 plus. And so we think there's an unfunded amount for third-party hearings and denials of about $92,500. And so that's what I just wanted to mention in our comment to this bill.
Sure.
Representative Mitchell.
Mr. Marsh, under the existing procedure, certainly the department has costs involved there, don't you? And I'm wondering, my guess is you've included that in your budget for this coming biennium. This should save some of those negotiating costs or the staff time if you went through the existing process. Couldn't you use some of those funds to utilize new process?
Mr. Chair, Representative Messerly, actually, we think that the bill adds administrative process to what we do now, and so we don't think it would save us any money, because we would still have to go through the negotiating process with the source, the city or industrial facility. And then when we had finished the negotiations today, we would simply sign the agreement and be done with it. This would add, at the request of the party, additional process, so we don't think that that could be covered by our existing budget request.
Follow-up question.
But our fiscal here is additional money, isn't it? Fiscal report. So you would take what you budgeted plus this additional fiscal report, is that right?
Mr. Chair, Representative, what Mr. Marsh was discussing was a revised fiscal that they had just submitted to us this morning in response to the proposed amendments that would allow a fee to be imposed. And again, and that difference would be on the fiscal impact statement that you have of a little over $300,000. The new revised fiscal, based on what the department has provided, is about $240,000. That's about 92,000 of that from general fund. The rest would be collected from fees. And that would be new resources that are not budgeted currently.
Any further questions? Mr. Ledger, if you could send back for just a moment.
Sure. The only question that occurs to me is why we're creating this new stepped process, why it can't pay for itself. Why do we need any general fund money? That's the question I'd ask either one of you.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Corcoran, we're very comfortable with paying for this whole thing with one exception, and that is if we go through this whole process here and we come down to hearing requests, if the company requests a hearing, we think that's fair, or the city requests a hearing, they should pay for it. The problem we run into here a little bit is who pays for the hearing that is requested? And we could either have, I suppose, in theory, somebody could just ask for a hearing other than the company, someone in the general public, and then the company has to pick up the tab, even though they didn't ask for it. We're not sure if that's fair. Also, it has the potential of becoming punitive, frankly. And that is, you know, if you want to cost the money, you just request a hearing. The other thing is if the person who requests a hearing, for instance, environmental group, has to pay for the hearing, then we're probably looking at something that isn't comparable to the federal. On the federal news side, basically, you know, just covered by general tax money. So that the problem we run into there is who pays for it. And we think it's reasonable to pay for everything that the process takes. We're a little concerned, though, about having this one piece that is out of our control that somebody can ask for and having to pick up the tab for that. But that's sort of how this was constructed.
Representative Jensen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We run into legal problems if the people requesting the hearing, other than the city or the people, you know, have to pay for the hearing?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Jensen, our attorneys say yes. It would act essentially as a bar. One could construe that, well, it's a bar going the other way, too, but we're willing to change that bar.
Mr. Chair?
Question?
So why can't you have loser pay? In other words, if an environmental group requests a hearing and they lose, then why shouldn't they have to pay for it?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Corcoran, what comes out of this is not a win-lose type of thing. What comes out is a final consent order.
But, well, my point is Mr. Chair, is if the assumption would be that the hearing would be to change the consent order. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Corcoran, yes.
So if that's the case, then what I mean by loser pays is that if there's no change in the consent order, then why doesn't the party that asked for the hearing have to pay for it? If they're just doing it as sort of a punitive or an obstacle-creating measure in the first place.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Corcoran, I don't know if that would pass the comparable to the federal test.
Okay.
This has to be comparable to the federal, and there's no guarantee that it is now, I mean, because we've changed it a little bit. I mean, certainly if that were comparable to federal, and that would be okay. It adds another step, probably some more strife. But we have to try to keep it as closely as we can to the federal.
Senator Collins.
John, how many hearing requests do you anticipate at a local level?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Tarno, I couldn't say on the city's part, but I would guess on the industry's part, we might be looking at 10 a year.
Mr. Chair, if I may, Senator Tarno, we estimated that there'd be almost all of the municipal penalty recipients would request a hearing. It's about 20 per year, and we estimated about a third of the industrial recipients, which would be, again, about 20. So, you know, we don't know. It could be 10, it could be 20, but that's what we've estimated.
It is 40 a year.
Thank you. Other questions? Mr. Ledger, would you address the issue of broadening the record that can be considered in the requested hearing?
I read that the bill allows the consideration of additional information not considered in the initial hearing.
Mr. Chairman, you know, the bill, as I recall, the trigger for the hearing, one of the triggers is that the information must be new. But that is certainly something we'd be willing to look at.
Further questions? Colleagues, this is a public hearing only. I'll ask if any other person here present has testimony they'd like to bring.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Roy Tiffany, League of Oregon Cities. It was mentioned earlier that Aqua Association of Clean Water Agencies is a co-sponsor. The League does not represent Aqua per se, but the League has been in contact with AOI on this bill, and we are very, very supportive of this bill. It simply provides a process which would limit third-party liability. In our eyes, could save taxpayer dollars at the local level as well at the state level. You have to answer any questions.
Questions? Mr. Tiffany or any member of the town or Senate Messler?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Does the League of Oregon Cities have any response to our concern that we just discussed about the hearing costs?
About?
The hearing costs.
About the amendment?
Yes.
We're supportive of the amendment. We feel that if the city requests to go through this process, that it's fair that they go ahead and pay for that process. However, we would have the same concerns that Associated Oregon Industries does if a third party comes to the table in a purely punitive way, asking for a hearing which would cost resources. We'd have to think seriously about which process we would want to go through. Additionally, I'd add the department estimated that all 20, roughly 20 per year violations on cities, there has never been a third-party lawsuit, to my knowledge, on municipal turn order. So I'm not sure that all 20 would actually go through this process.
Mr. Chair, I have just a question for both of them. The League as well as Mr. Ledger. If we were not able to fund the general fund portion of it, would you not be in favor of the amendment or the bill?
Mr. Chairman's question, Mr. Representative, as a question to me is that if we were not able to fund it, would we still be in favor of it?
The general fund portion is.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Mesler, yes, we would.
We'd still be in favor.
We're in favor of the amendment.
Further questions? Any other person here present that wishes to testify on Senate Bill 1189A? Senator George is not present. I see that he's a co-sponsor on the bill. Seeing no others present that wish to testify on the bill, we're going to go ahead and close the public hearing if there's no further questions. Okay. Close the public hearing on Senate Bill 1189A. Colleagues, I wanted to mention something to you before we adjourn this morning. We have a Senate and House sessions at 10, I think, this morning.
9:45.
Okay.
10 House at 10.
I wanted to express my appreciation to you for the work that we did last week during the Columbia River Gorge Commission budget and the public hearing. I think we had a good turnout from the public, and the record that was produced will help guide our deliberations, I'm sure. But the thing that I wanted to bring your attention is that many of the members of the public, even though we started the hearing by
explaining that we were under a call, that our Senate members had to be leaving the hearing early, that our House members would be leaving when they were called, and that if necessary, we would continue the hearing after the lunch hour. Many of the folks that came into the hearing only observed our members as they were leaving, coming and going. Some had to testify on other bills in other hearings. The call of the Senate went out. A few minutes later, there was a quorum call, and so the chair had to leave the committee hearing as well. We did continue a subcommittee of the subcommittee and heard additional testimony. The chair came back to the hearing room. The House members were subject to call. And so between the calls of House and Senate and the various committees, I think our audience observed a lot of goings and comings of members, and I think they got the impression at one point in time that there was no member in attendance at the hearing, which, of course, was not the case. We did give the gavel to Representative Jensen for a period of time. You may get some comments on that. I think it behooves us as chair people to frequently explain to the members of the public that we will be leaving, depending on the duties of the members, and that if that's difficult for people to understand, it's probably because the chairman didn't explain it thoroughly enough or frequently enough to members of the public who watched our folks running in and out of the room and concluded from that there was inattentiveness from the chair and from the committee to that hearing. But, of course, we all know that under the stresses that we're operating in during this part of the session, that with bills being heard and committees opening and closing, that's standard operating procedure for this portion of the legislative session. But if you do get mail, I'd appreciate it if you'd refer those pieces of correspondence to the chair, and I'll try to answer their questions and respond to the criticisms. I thought the hearing was an excellent hearing. We did create a good public record, I thought, and we had five members of the public who had expressed some concern about the operation of the Gorge Commission, and I think we had 29 who expressed support for the commission. So.
Chair, I just signed the complaints for Tano. I've had no problem at all.
Yeah, so. Exactly right.
He can't spell, though. He spells V-I-R-I-A.
Yeah. I thought it was V-I-A-G-R-A.
Thinking that this is going
I'll let the record show that the chair has completely lost control of the committee once again, and we stand in adjournment until tomorrow.
He told me to give me...